Gummidge over Rustavelli Avenue. This is TheBealPod.com coming to you from our studios high atop Prospero's Books and Cafe. Today is the 13th of September 2012. Nice to finally be back in the Samshoblo. On this date in 335, Emperor Constantine the Great consecrated the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. In 1501, Michelangelo began work on his statue, David. 1609, Henry Hudson reached the river that would later be named after him. In 1791, Louis XVI of France accepts the new constitution. Little too little, a little too late. In 1922, final act of the Greco-Turkish War, the Great Fire of Smyrna, now Izmir. 1946, Henry Kuprashvili, the Georgian doctor of political sciences, who's well known for breaking a Guinness Book of World Records for swimming the Dardanelles with his hands and feet bound in the traditional Georgian style of swimming, called Kolchian, was born in Khashuri. I don't know if any of you have ever met him, but he's in really good shape.
Nor have I ever seen anyone swim like that.
No, it's a big thing. It's a training thing that they used to do in the Georgian military.
Like a dolphin.
Like a dolphin. You do a dolphin kick. Yeah, it's very impressive, actually. In 1953, Nikita Khrushchev is appointed Secretary General of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. In an amazing twist, later there was a French movie made about his life called La Femme Nikita, where he is played by a woman. In 1968, Albania leaves the Warsaw Pact. In 1971, the Attica prison riot ends. In 1980, Willie Nelson played at the White House and smokes a big Austin torpedo on the roof after the concert. Roof of the White House. It's true. 1993, Israel and Palestine sign a Declaration of Principles. Birthdays today, Claudette Colbert, former very cool governor of Texas, Ann Richards, and Mel Torme. We'll be hearing from Mel later on. Today is International Chocolate Day and International Programmers Day. Hug a nerd.
Give chocolate to a nerd.
Give chocolate to a nerd, or hug a nerd, and hug a nerd with the chocolate in between you and the nerd. Or maybe you're a nerd, in which case, you know, have some chocolate. My Georgian Journal and Kvitis Palitha article this coming week will be about the construction going on in clear violation of the law, and that they never seem to put the plans up where you can see them, which is very frustrating. Developers often block sidewalks all over the place, and the flurry of construction going on before the election, and it's just very annoying. We hope that somebody will deal with that. Like, for example, majoritarian MP candidate Archil Geganava, who's running in Tatsminda in Old Tbilisi, where there seems to be so much construction and
walking around his headquarters.
His headquarters, right near the TheBealPod.com command central.
Probably he chose a strategic location where he could like put some spin on
our
show.
Okay, so the upcoming parliamentary elections dominate this week's headlines. According to the statements for a 5-member delegation for the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, or PACE, as it's known in the trade, on Wednesday, the pre-election situation ahead of the crucial October 1st elections is, and I quote, competitive, giving voters a real choice between, and I quote, alternatives, but increasing, and I quote, polarization and antagonism, end quote, is a source of concern.
It's a nice thing to have alternatives.
Right, you know.
The one-party system is always kind of boring.
Yeah. The delegation is led by Christian Democratic lawmaker from Italy, Luca Volonte. No information as to whether he was one of the many Christian Democratic lawmakers bought by Berlusconi in the Italian parliament. From a group of Eastern European People's Party, EPP. They visited Georgia September 11th through 12th to evaluate the pre-election environment and to meet with senior government officials and political party members.
And it might be relevant that the United National Movement is the Georgian member of the European People's Parties.
Right.
So they are in one alliance. And actually, when you look at the discussions that take place in Brussels, the conservatives are always trying to kind of defend, you know, the members of the conservative parties, and the social democrats do the same with the social democrats. There's kind of a
interesting,
friendlier relationship.
This was out of like 2 years ago or something, I remember. Yeah.
See, because, I mean, for those Americans that are listening, in Europe, political parties are connected with ideologies, whereas in America, they are organizational instruments to get angry at presidential candidates. So it's sort of a different political system there. These guys, I don't know if they're all guys, maybe there's some women, they visited Georgia September 11th to 12th to evaluate pre-election environment and to meet with senior government officials and political party members. In its first interim report, a long-term election observer mission from the OSCE's Office for Democratic Institutions and Human Rights, the aptly named ODIHR, described the pre-election environment in Georgia as, and I quote, polarized and characterized by, and I quote, frequent public exchanges of accusations and allegations among political adversaries, end quote. The 8-page interim report covers the period from August 22nd to September 5th. Quote, while UNM has expressed commitment to conduct elections in full compliance with standards, the GD, Georgian Dream, or OTSNEBA to those in the know, has expressed a lack of trust in the electoral process, raising concerns about abuse of administrative resources and intimidation of supporters, end quote. The report reads, the document also mentions large fines imposed on Ivanishvili's team and I quote, concerns from various organizations expressed with regards to the fine. Portraying the media environment, the report said, sees divisions saying that Rustavi 2 and Imedi television stations, quote, are widely perceived as supportive of the government, end quote. No bull, Sherlock. And the coverage of Kavkazia TV, Maestro TV, and Ivanishvili's funded Channel 9 are, quote, all broadly regarded as pro-opposition, end quote. OSCE ODIHR launched the observer missions on August 22nd with a core team of 16 experts in Tbilisi and 28 long-term observers who are deployed throughout Georgia. By the way, headed by the famously wily and shrewd Nikolai Volchanov of Bulgaria, who was the main guy back in crucial 2003 elections, and I think even before that once or twice, but I can't remember. Welcome back to the caulk, Nikolai.
I think it's interesting because there's kind of this assumption, you know, I mean, there's been lots of talk of what's going to happen immediately after the elections on October 2nd. And I think, you know, Ivanishvili has said, I think, that there's going to be manifestations almost no matter what. Other leaders like Kaja Kukava have said the same thing. And what's kind of interesting is to see the change in opinion regarding or willingness to engage in those types of activities and also trust towards the elections. There's been some data that's come out recently that compares August attitudes with, I believe, June attitudes, and the number of people who said that they would engage in post-election protests, it has dropped. Obviously, the larger numbers are within Georgian Dream and PVC-based, but, you know, I think there have been some improvements lately.
Right. But the question is, how committed are those that are, you know, still willing to protest? If the 10-15% are, like, hardcore guys that, you know, would protest for weeks no matter what, then could still lead to some large-scale protests.
I mean, I think the fact that Tbili Soba is going to be held immediately after the elections is very cleverly designated loudly that, you know, 2 days after the elections we're going to need to start setting up Tbili Soba stuff is going to, and for a lot of other reasons, I don't know how long the demonstration will go on. Of course they could. There has been in the past many demonstrations that have been supported by people being given money to show up at demonstrations, and certainly that could be a possibility this time around, or it could be that people are really angry. But really important is demonstrations that happen election night, especially if, for example, there's crowds and polling stations outside of them, and you know, some there's a lot of incidents of reports of fraud or something like that, the big hullabaloo starts that night.
Especially if some cable providers turn off the opposition TV stations that night because the must carry rules end. And people feel that they're cut off. They don't know what's happening. And
there are certainly a lot of dangers. I mean, it's, you know, the other thing is considering that the expectations are being set really very, very high by Ivanishvili as to what their share in the number of seats will be. You know, it could be that you know, even if the leadership of the opposition is not inciting, complications at that point, that, the cat will be out of the bag. It's not, it's a big coalition. There's a lot of people within that group that are, you know, that are pretty, you know, have a history of political aggression, you know, so we'll have to see. And it could be that there really are a lot of problems in the elections and that they would have some pretty legitimate concerns. Who knows how that would be expressed?
Well, I mean, to call for things, though, on October 2nd, I think is a bit foolish or, you know, at least a bit hasty, because there aren't going to really be any sort of official statements being made, I think, until October 2nd, midday. And I don't think NDI or IRI are going to be making any statements until the 3rd of October. And then, of course, official election results aren't announced until 20 days later. And so to call for things immediately the day after the elections...
I've got a feeling there are going to be some results. I don't know exactly when, but I think that there are going to be results that are going to start to show up the wee hours of the morning.
I don't think, PVT's probably not going to be until later.
I don't know. We'll have to see. I mean, there are PVTs and there are PVTs. I mean, the proliferation of discussions about who's going to be having having PVT is more. It's not clear that, you know, the CEC, for example, in the past has often said, you know, they will say, well, we've got, you know, whatever, 40% or 60% of the returns in, and here's the provisional results, but they don't release the precinct-by-precinct results that those are based on, although TI, the hardest-working NGO in Georgia, tried to get that to put in the election law. It was not. So you could have these sort of percentages showing up from the CEC with nobody knowing what they mean, and if that conflicts with real PVTs or with less real PVTs, that could be frustrating. And also something that there's not been much formal discussion of is exit polls. Will there be any exit polls? Any real exit polls or not so real exit polls?
GfK is doing it for the public broadcaster.
Who's GfK?
It's a Fessel. It's a European pollster, big one.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, that's the exit polls are going to be very, very important in this. And when that exit poll information comes out, you know, whether there's one that comes out late afternoon, even though that's illegal, it's sort of leaked, and we got some information about that. That'll be important.
And maybe for the non-election experts, PVTs are parallel voting vote tabulations where independent observers monitor and count or monitor the counting in each station or in the sample of stations and then send back like these results, and you can calculate kind of an approximate result.
I mean, depending on if there's fraud, depending on the method of the fraud, it can be in some circumstances a method to find out what the results of the election should have been if there had not been fraud. It doesn't always work, but sometimes it does. At a press conference in Tbilisi on September 12th, that being yesterday, U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Tom Melia and my old boss at NDI, who is leading the U.S. interagency delegation, said that the U.S. strongly supports the extension of must offer off principles after Election Day, which was nice. I would also say that in there, and I had actually attended that press conference, the clear message was that the United States government is with however the Georgian public votes, which is a constructive message and one that also has the added benefit of being true. Interestingly, the one from the questions from the journalist afterwards, you know, were, well, you know, Bidzina, there's rumors that he's close to Russia, and what if he wins? You know, after the question had been answered, and it just goes to show you how at least the journalists present there, and I think in general a lot of the Georgian public really feel like, you know, that Georgian politics in one way or another are a proxy battle between the United States and Russia, which at least according to U.S. officials, it's not. And it really isn't. I don't know how the Kremlin feels about that, I don't know really any Kremlin officials, but certainly in Georgia, that's...
Are you sure?
What the heck is that supposed to be? What are you going to try to work? This is a public conversation here, you know? Like, come on, I don't know.
I just love that you added that in. Like, that would be the assumption somebody would have.
Well, you know, there's a lot of stories floating around about me, you know? You got to be careful. It's just that seems to loom so large for the Georgian public, you know? Georgia Ministry of Defense said on yesterday that a group of experts from the United States have started studying Georgia's air defense capabilities with the aim of developing a doctrine based on which the U.S. would help the country bolster its air defense capabilities. The ministry's statements explained that the move marked a launch of the implementation of the six-point agreement between the U.S. and Georgian presidents, reached during a meeting in Washington in January. The agreement seeks defense cooperation between the two countries to take it to the next phase. While visiting Tbilisi on September 6th and 7th, U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham, John McCain, and Joe Lieberman, part of a youth delegation from the U.S. Congress, stated that they would keep pushing for U.S. defensive weapons to be supplied to Georgia. Quote, "We will continue to fight for defensive weapons from the United States to Georgia so the government can defend the people of Georgia and their freedom." quote, end quote, said Senator Joe Lieberman, the alleged supposed Democrat. The visiting senators met both with opposition leaders and senior government officials. Yes, they met with Ivanishvili, and then he said that they, that, you know, they were ticked off at Misha, and then they said, no, we aren't. And I don't know, there's a lot of he said, she said, he said, he said stuff after that. Bidzina Ivanishvili refused to take part in the televised debate on Sunday. The other invited participants were Prime Minister Vano Medavashvili, Christian Democratic Movement leader Georgi Targamadze, labor leader and colorful local character Shalva Nathilashvili. The debates were organized by the Georgian Public Broadcaster with the support of USAID and IFAS. Bidzina cited two reasons for shunning the debate. The first was that, in his opinion, these debates were not, and I quote, real. The second was that he wanted to debate with Misha himself. Both Medavashvili and Natalashvili criticized Bidzina's absence in the studio. Medavashvili said that if all the candidates had participated, it would have been more interesting and showed a respect for voters and TV viewers. The next round of TV debates will be aired on September 18th between the same political party's number one MP candidates on their party's list. For UNM, this is incumbent parliamentary speaker Dato Bakradze, as well as Shalva Nathilashvili for Labour. Let's see if he ends up taking his seat if they get the 5%, which, you know, we'll have to see whether that happens. And Georgi Targamadze of the Christian Democratic Party. In the case of Georgian Dream, it is articulate ex-footballer Kaha Kaladze.
So many things to talk about in this. First off, I really am so surprised that Natilashvili is still around. I mean, when I want to know where their party is funded from. I haven't looked it up, but
because they
made
it into parliament, they get a significant amount of public funds
for not going.
Not showing up.
Yeah. So the other thing that I find very interesting is that they're talking about candidates for the prime ministerial post, and for everyone who knows, I mean, you know that no one elects the prime minister in Georgia. So it's quite interesting that there are prime ministerial candidates who feel the need to speak out to the public when it's really the party members who are electing them. And this,
well,
of course, is not really even relevant until 2013 when the constitutional changes actually happen, and then it will happen that way. And in 2012, it's still going to be Misha Saakashvili who appoints the prime minister. So,
right.
I mean, frankly, the fact that Bidzina Ivanishvili didn't participate in these, I can't disagree with him, to be honest.
Yeah, but he's also not on the list. And I
that's because he's a foreigner.
No.
That was a joke.
Yes. He's a foreigner, of course, but... Yeah.
Yeah, my favorite line from the thing was, from Natalashvili, of course... God save us from this hell. May God send this government together with its oligarchic opposition to a political afterlife.
Yeah, there's nothing about, you know, having no supporters and being a total clown that makes you a really legitimate politician here. I mean,
no, that's what you need to be a legitimate politician here. I mean, that's the way it that's the way it works.
My God.
Messenger reported on September 11th that Maestro's TV satellite antenna seized by the government may be released based on a decision of Georgia's interagency task force created under the auspices of the National Security Council. Maestro will be allowed to distribute the satellite antennas via the Georgian post office to socially vulnerable families.
And what is interesting about this is that so far the rule is if you're a socially vulnerable family, so if you get state assistance because your household income is so low, if you have a satellite dish, then you lose that because it's seen as a luxury item. So it's like having a new TV set or a new fridge or something like that. So you disqualify basically for receiving assistance. So I don't know how they came up with this.
Dear. Well, what I heard was that the idea was that they didn't want people in Otsneba t-shirts distributing the things because then it was obviously a political payoff. And so, yeah, who knows? So I guess...
Is the post office doing it free of charge?
Yeah, also, is there a post office? Like, since when has ever anybody gotten any mail delivered in Georgia? You know, have they organized that yet? And don't the Germans want to buy the postal system?
No. Well, it's gotten better. Like, they have some new cars and mopeds. But I don't think they have nationwide
coverage. First step, we need a bunch of cars and mopeds. Yeah. Okay. What do they work for, the Interior Ministry or something?
No, the environment.
Of course. The Gamgeob of Poti. All right. Research published by Transparency International Georgia on September 12th, that also being yesterday, finds that the ruling United National Movement Party uses administrative resources such as social advertisements for for electoral and political purposes. The author, Levon Natharoshvili, argues that social advertisements and many video clips aired as social advertisements by the public broadcaster during the monitoring period of October 1st through August 1st, 2012, did not meet the criteria set forth by Georgian law. The videos, according to the research, represented political advertisements in favor of the ruling party. They said a number of other things. I mean, essentially, it was about the levelness of the playing field. Had nothing to do with the statement, but from my listening to this, what it said was the opposition has made a lot of allegations against the government about not level playing field and use of state resources against the opposition. And what TI said is there are many cases that we have checked that are indeed ways in which the government have used their resources to make it difficult for the opposition to campaign. And so, things may be competitive, which is obvious, but it's not a level playing field, is basically what the TI report said.
If you compare outdoor advertising in Tbilisi between the ruling party, which has the majority of all billboards in Georgia right now, and the Georgian Dream, I haven't seen any Georgian Dream posters except on their headquarters.
Yeah.
Okay, can I share just something kind of funny? So, the Marshukas have basically been covered over many of them have been covered over in advertisements for candidates for the UNM. And one of these, someone had opened one of the little windows in the back, which coincided perfectly with the guy's face. So it was like a headless body driving by on this Marshuka.
You can watch out and be a UNM candidate.
I know, you put your face in and you're a UNM
candidate. Take your picture at the amusement park. Yeah, fantastic. But nobody wants to. Yesterday evening, the gigantic French big box retail chain Carrefour was officially opened in Tbilisi in Dihomi near the U.S. Embassy in the distant exurb known by Tbilisi's expats as the Northwest Territories. Meanwhile, the hip latte-quaffing urbanites like ourselves are excited about the smart supermarket in the old telecom building right next to the Radisson opening up quite soon, looking like they're already starting to stock the shelves.
And it looks like Goodwill already kind of took some percentages off all their prices. Like every item there is now, like, I think 10% off or something like
really?
That.
Really? Yeah, that's good to know.
So competition is kicking in.
No, glad to hear it. One thing about the elections, I know that I've noticed, and perhaps you have, that there are a lot of things opening up these days, like just a lot of openings, because I feel as if Imedi isn't able to report on enough ribbon-cutting ceremonies, by the president, so... Like, have you noticed that?
It's really dramatic, actually. I mean, I was just driving across the country, and the number of things under construction and number of new things, I mean, there's just a real tangible presence of, improvements, and a lot of it, of course, happening now to coincide with the elections. I don't know how many things are going to be opened in advance, but one thing that I saw was the Kutaisi Airport, which is supposed to be opened, I think, on the 27th. And if I was being pointed in the direction of the appropriate building, I mean, it looked almost nowhere near finished. It's possible that they're going to be working 24 hours a day or something.
It's modern architecture. It's not open. Supposed to look finished.
the windy airport. but there's just so much. I mean, in Tbilisi, you just go around and there's just streets torn up all over the place, cement and asphalt being laid, trucks full of wood that you have to dodge on the roads. I mean, just...
Yeah. I mean, is that... I don't know. Like, can we speak for the average Georgian voter here? Is anybody impressed by that? Does anyone say, boy, there's a lot going on here. I think I'll vote for the ruling party.
Honestly, I don't know if you're going to get that direct of a connection, but I'm sure that there's something that goes into the subconscious that, there's a lot happening, these people are doing stuff for us.
And they're not people who say, I don't really want to walk into an oncoming, lane of traffic around the sidewalk that's been blocked off, in order to show this little electoral stunt. I mean... Mm-hmm. Nobody.
You just don't appreciate local culture because they're used to walking.
But it creates
No, I mean, there are a lot, of course. I mean, down by where we live, which is an old town, I mean, you basically have to walk in the street and then you get honked at, which is really fantastic.
All right. The Central Election Commission has extended the deadline for registration of Georgian citizens living abroad from September 10th to September 13th. In order to cast a ballot in the October 1st parliamentary election overseas, voters must undergo registration at the polling stations opened in Georgia's embassies or consulates. According to Civil.ge, some groups of Georgian expatriates are campaigning in various countries demanding the opening of additional polling stations. Their argument for that is those who live outside the capital cities will not have an easy time traveling on a working day to the capital in order to vote. There are a total of 40 polling stations in 38 cities in 32 countries. Two polling stations were set up in the Helmand province for Georgia soldiers serving in Afghanistan. The largest number of Georgians living outside of Georgia is in Russia, but there are no polling stations in Russia due to a lack of diplomatic relations between the two countries. According to the Economic Policy Research Center, a Tbilisi-based think tank, there are 250,000 to 300,000 Georgian migrants working abroad, out of which around 200,000 are in Russia. It is estimated by various sources that the number of Georgian citizens living in Russia is as high as 1 million. It's a lot more than 200,000,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Well, and essentially they're disenfranchised.
Yeah, which is not good. So, you know, come on home and vote. According to the NDI commissioned poll published last Friday, done by CRRC, 37% of likely voters said that they would vote for UNM, while only 12% said they would vote for Bidzina's Georgian Dream Coalition. While for UNM, the result is almost the same as the previous poll conducted in June, Georgian Dream lost 6 points. In August, 22% were undecided, as was the case in June. 3% answered that they would vote for none of the political parties. And the number of likely voters who refused to answer increased from 16% in June to 21% in August. Keep in mind that that means that there is an equivocal answer for 46% of the respondents as to their preference. So although the poll is fair, it's not clear how much it means, because I will wager that more than half of that 46% of likely voters will vote for Otsneba, maybe a lot more than half.
Assuming they walk to the polls.
Assuming they walk to the polls, you know. So I mean, you know, what real turnout will be is unclear. But I mean, I think apathy is, you know, less of a problem here than in many more developed democracies.
Do we think the higher the turnout, the larger the support for the opposition?
I don't see that necessarily. I mean, unless you know something, I don't know. I mean, no. I don't know that turnout necessarily favors one side or the other.
I think, though, if you get people who are coming to the polls who haven't been coming to the polls before, they're probably just slightly disgruntled.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it, you know, it can vary. I mean, there can be, you know, it can go either way. And a lot of it depends on what happens immediately before the election. I mean, what the perception is. I've heard stories that there are, that of the drop in, the alleged drop in Otsneva support in the last few days, the last few weeks, a lot of that comes from these discussions about how, well, there are going to be demonstrations and we may not accept the results, and there's a feeling that it's sort of promoting instability and, you know, and this and that.
Mm.
The Interior Ministry reported on Saturday that they had captured one of the members of an armed group which clashed with Georgian troops in the Lapota Gorge near the Russian border on August 29th. According to the ministry statement, the identified detained suspect militant is a citizen of the Russian Federation for the North Caucasus, Ahmet Chataev. He was wounded and is currently receiving medical treatment. The statement also said that the special operation in the Lapota Gorge continues. Reporter Nick Clayton intrepidly went to Pankisi and wrote an interesting story for the news website Global Post. After speaking to locals, he concludes that many or all of the 11 men reported killed by the special operations groups a couple of weeks ago were actually Georgian residents of Chechen origin who'd lived in Pankisi. The story contradicts the government's narrative that these individuals were armed men from Dagestan who had crossed the border into Georgia and had taken hostages there. Clayton writes that according to locals, the authorities are imposing a quasi-police regime there, even though most of the foreign jihadists have left.
Really? Because, though, remember when we had Vlad on as a guest, he did not say that many of them had left and was actually...
Well, he said he didn't. He wasn't necessarily talking about jihadists, but he said there were Yemenis floating around and, you know, and mosques and, you know, opening up and that sort of thing. So, you know, hard to say. It does seem like there's not a great deal of information about, you know, about that particular area and credible concerns about the government story about those individuals. RIA Novosti reported that the Russian foreign ministry spokesman Alexander Lukashevich has criticized Swedish foreign minister Carl Bildt's comments about the potential negative effects of street protests, referring to the Arab Spring. Lukashevich thinks that it is contrary to Bildt's support for the Arab Spring and the street protests that took place there. Lukashevich's statement reads, and I quote, "The attempt to limit any reaction to possible violations of the democratic norms during the elections in Georgia look at least inconsistent in view of the minister," reads Lukashevich's incredibly annoying, hypocritical, and stupid statement. Sean Walker published a piece in The Independent earlier this week on Bidzina's campaign. Walker touches on the basic points. Bidzina is the 153rd richest human being on the planet and has more money than the Georgian state budget. He made his money by importing and selling computers in Russia and then used the profits to start a bank, Rosiski Credit. Prior to running for office, he was a reclusive oligarch and donated money to build the largest church in the country, to buy new uniforms for the army, to give second salaries to many artists and playwrights, and a bunch of other stuff. Walker notes that UNM tactics have shifted from direct assault on Bidzina, including stripping him of his Georgian citizenship and raiding his local bank, to portraying him as having strong ties with the Kremlin. Walker's main point is that the battle between Mish and Bidzina is a fight between two opposing narratives of Georgia. In his own words, and I quote, "Saakashvili's people talk of a thriving democracy knocking on Europe's door with the old Soviet mentality erased by efficient reforms and replaced with an effervescent meritocracy. Ivanishvili's brigade declares Georgia a totalitarian state controlled by a ruthless cartel of a few men around Saakashvili who have scooped up all the economic and political resources for themselves, control the majority of the media, and are painfully sensitive to even the smallest criticism," end quote. The truth, Walker concludes, is somewhere in between these two extremes, though Walker himself leans more towards Misha's view, especially since Bidzina's statement would be unthinkable in other countries of the region. I would say that, you know, about the smallest criticism bit, that's a little true. You gotta admit they don't do so well with public criticism. But
it depends on what you criticize them for.
True. Good.
Really? What do they accept?
Media.
Used in official communication logos, graphic design stuff, website
design.
They're
completely open to that.
Yeah, they're open to that, you know.
I actually just remembered something that I wanted to mention about the debates that we mentioned earlier about the prime ministerial candidates, quote unquote. The questions were all given to them a couple days in advance also, and so it wasn't really a debate. In fact, it was more of a, I'm going to read out my pre-prepared statement, and then I guess there was a little opportunity for people to have, a little tete-on-tete where they had 1 minute or something to give rebuttal, but it wasn't really.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. That's interesting. I hope the next one will have them thinking on their feet. On Saturday, the National Movement's party convention at Tbilisi Sports Palace summed up a day-long series of large outdoor campaign rallies in 10 towns across the country. The key message at almost all the rallies was that the upcoming parliamentary elections would be about making a choice between returning to a troubled past or going forward towards a better future and development. So, they're going with forward as their motto. Well, that's good.
It's so socialist, though.
It's so socialistic, exactly. Well, who does that put them in bed with? Addressing an outdoor campaign rally in Tel Aviv, Georgia's wine-producing Kakheti region, Bidzina said that if Otsneva comes to power, he would succeed in reopening the Russian market for Georgian wine, which is essential for its revival. Moscow banned exports of Georgian wine in 2006 on the pretext of it being dangerous for your health or some other thing like that. According to WineSpectator.com, this caused the wine industry to both improve quality and search out new Western markets. Prior to 2006, 90% of Georgian-produced wines went to Russia. Wine Spectator comments that as of August 22nd, Russia is the 156th member of WTO, meaning they weren't let in too early, and that the wine embargo will likely be lifted on Georgian wine and mineral water. According to the site, the question remains for Georgian winemakers is whether they will continue to reach out to Western markets with high-quality products or if they will fall back on Soviet and post-Soviet high-yield vineyards and semi-sweet wine for Russian export. According to Bidzina, His coalition plans to hold its next large outdoor campaign rally in Akhaltsikhe on September 15th.
And I'm hearing that everybody who arrives at the Tbilisi airport now gets a bottle of wine labeled like no vineyard, just Georgia.
Yeah, I got that bottle of wine, and I thought, you know what they could do instead of you get a little bottle of wine.
I haven't got one.
Well, you didn't fly into Georgia recently.
I have.
Well, okay. You wrong airline, I guess. I was thinking, like, you know, that's great that they give us wine, but what would be really cool is if they had a taxi dispatcher out front to keep the cab drivers from ripping you off and driving at 140 kilometers an hour to, you know, bring you back into town. But another question. The NGO New Generation New Initiative, NGNI, has received a grant from the Dutch Embassy to do a PBT on Election Day. NGNI has a reputation for being quite friendly with the ruling party. Another PBT is going to be done by ISFED. Goka Gunsadze's League of Voters is also considering one. Interesting thing will be when these numbers come out, if those who do them will publicize the precinct-by-precinct information, as we discussed earlier, they can be compared to the CEC's data and how fast the CEC does the same. They always have it broken down by precinct, but don't release it until the very last legal minute. In a statement on September 10th, the Russian Foreign Ministry said that NATO failed to learn the lessons of the tragic events of 2008 in the South Caucasus. NATO, according to the statement... I'll skip the accent. Encourages revanchist. Well, I need to do the accent because it's just so perfect. Encourages revanchist aspirations of the Georgian leadership, fueling its reluctance to recognize political realities in the region and increased tensions in the South Caucasus. Revanchist. Oh my God, who said that since like 1978?
That's a really strong statement. That's so direct.
I know it is. I know. You know, it's just getting worse and worse. I don't know. It's not. And it's like they're after the election season. You know. This statement, I think Putin's mad because of all of his, you know, recent baby bird killing, you know. Did you hear about that?
I saw a picture of him.
Oh, God, yes. Okay, anyway, it's another stunt where he was, like, gonna, I don't know, fly in by hang glider to save some birds, and in setting up the stunt, they killed these, you know, two, baby chicks that were, you know.
Well, did you hear about this from a Georgian?
Yeah.
No, it was on the internet.
I saw a picture of him. Yeah, he was supposed to be, like, demonstrating their flight path so that they could, you know, go migrate.
Exactly.
So apparently, like they didn't follow him.
Like the amphora that he found in the, you know. Yeah. Anyway, this statement about revanchism was a response to NATO Secretary General Rasmussen's encouraging remarks made in Tbilisi during his visit. And I quote, my Danish accent's not so hot, "The future is in your hands, but know this, you have a friend in NATO and a future home in NATO." According to Prime News Agency, EU representatives will arrive in Georgia on September 17th to hold a meeting on the issue of visa-free travel between the EU and Georgia. Tbilisi City Hall has introduced a new discount system for passengers of public transit who pay fees through Metro Money plastic cards. The first route will cost 50 tetri, while other routes made within the next hour and a half will be free of charge. Currently, the number of Metro Money users is more than 1 million. According to City Hall, if this discount system gets requested by voters, 15,000 on its website, it will be introduced in the near future. These cards are great, by the way. I encourage all Tbilisi residents and visitors to get one. See you on a bus.
And won't you have warm feelings about the UNM?
Exactly. I know that'll, you know, do it for me.
It's a 50 tetri.
50, like, yeah, 50 tetri. Hey, listen, you know, could be a lot worse. Although, what makes me love, you know, somebody in a position of authority, I still want to know who did this, are those little boards where they tell you which bus is coming in and how many minutes. I love those things. In the Global Competitiveness Report 2012-2013 produced recently by the World Economic Forum, Georgia jumped by 11 positions from 88th to 77th among the 144 listed countries. In terms of development stage, Georgia moved from being in the group of transition countries to the group of efficiently driven countries.
I would be interested to hear if that is like basically the same phenomena that we saw with the Doing Business Index, where basically through smart consulting assistance, Georgia really like analyzes the methodology and then
like
seeks,
the
you know, like how can we go up in the ranking, or if it's like based on really
well, I mean,
goals and actual improvements.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, if people are going to listen to those indexes have to be figured out, you know, somehow. And I see it is reasonable for the Georgian government to look at statistically how those things are done and to do their best on those things. I mean, that's fair. And
if I remember correctly, that one's actually largely based on an opinion poll among business people in every country.
There's an entire department within the Ministry of Justice that does just that. It looks at the, you know, precisely how all of these various indices are set up, and you know what the low hanging fruit are in terms of improvements. Geostat, the Georgian State Statistics Office, reported on September 10th that during the second quarter of 2012, foreign direct investment in Georgia dropped by 11.7% compared to the previous year to $219.4 million. Second quarter FDI figures is a 19% decline from the previous month. However, aggregate FDI for the first 6 months of 2012 is at $488 million, a 6.6% increase from 2011.
But we reported, you remember, last time or sometime recently that they've changed the way that they calculate FDI.
Exactly. Making it a lot more advantageous so that, you know, essentially...
It's like foreign...
Profits of partly foreign-owned companies that stay within the country are counted as FDI.
The key FDI destination sectors in the second quarter were energy, $75 million, transport and communication, $58 million U.S. dollars, and food processing industry, $42 million.
Maybe that tells us that these industries are very profitable.
Could be. And the financial services, which at $19 million U.S. dollars, while the top investors were the Netherlands at 37%, which does not necessarily mean Dutch human beings and their money. Followed by the United States with $25 million and Azerbaijan with $21 million U.S. dollars. Former HSBC building next to the Marriott is going to be turned into an Azerbaijani bank called Pasha Bank, Pasha something Bank.
Yeah, it's delayed. They were supposed to have started at the beginning of 2012, but they pushed it back.
Yeah. Maya Medvedova was appointed Georgia's business ombudsman, replacing Georgi Pertaya, who is now heading the Invest in Georgia agency. Previously, Medvedova worked as director general at ProCredit Bank, is married to a guy senior in the Bank of Georgia. This is a great choice, and if she's given some influence, could be a really great thing for Georgia. And, like Matthias Hooter, the Salzburg correspondent for Tpielpod.com, she is an alumni of CICE, the Johns Hopkins School for Advanced International Naval Contemplation.
The new U.S. ambassador as well.
Oh, really? The new U.S. ambassador. Well, what do you know? The CICE crowd, you know, is just, oh, that's good to know. Well, you'll have to have a little soiree.
Maybe you can meet over your brunches.
Your brunches, right. The Star Chamber. Geostat reports that 154 new hotels opened last year in Georgia in 2011. A total of 616 hotels were operating, an increase of 33.3% from the previous year. The total number of hotel rooms available in 2011 across the country was 12,910. Total number of hotel guests was 853,049. Non-residents of Georgia accounted for more than half of these, a 43% increase since 2010.
So they're including, I guess, guest houses in this, too, because, I mean, to have 140 new hotels, I mean, there's probably not that many actual rooms.
Guest houses, sure. Sports fans in Georgia enjoyed the festive atmosphere this Tuesday, the 11th of September, when the Georgia national basketball team defeated the visiting team from the Netherlands in a qualifying match. It was 97-89 for the 2013 European Championship Games. We're not really big on sports here at Tpielpod.com, but we will always report on big Georgian wins. Lay low. I don't mean like the song.
Yeah.
I mean,
like, and the 0-1 loss against Spain in football.
Okay. On the same evening in Tbilisi, the Spanish soccer team achieved a narrow 0-1 victory over the Georgians. Spain's manager, Vicente del Bosque, said, and I quote, "I want to congratulate Georgia for their extraordinary performance. They put us in a lot of difficulty with their enthusiasm and their ability to defend all our attacks. through both the center and the wings, end quote, losing to Spain 1-0 in soccer is basically,
like,
in a
winning.
Larger sense, like winning. Like, I mean, let's be real.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, so come on.
Yeah.
That was a win.
So
good job,
guys.
It's definitely better than losing against Italy 2-0 because the opposition leader scores two goals on the wrong side.
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
is still now was, like Misha's popular slogan.
Yeah, that's really, that was really problematic.
I don't
get
the reference.
There was a game. It was a bad game.
It was 2 years ago, and Kaka Kalatze
was
the captain of the football game.
Oh, but he didn't score. Oh, he scored.
He scored, but on
his own team.
Again, twice.
Yeah.
Still counts.
Winston Featherly Bean, who covered the 2008 war as a young reporter working for a Tbilisi-based paper, was shot in the ankle and held by Ossetian rebels, published a very interesting and well-written account of his experience in the Anchorage Press. It's really well worth checking out. It's the first he's really written a comprehensive story about it, and it's a sad but quite interesting story. Just Google Winston Featherly, Featherly, and you'll find it. If you want to have an excellent background on the upcoming elections, check out Tom DeWall's new briefing paper called A Crucial Election for Georgia online at carnegieendowment.org. Now from our listeners, and I quote, I happen to hear on your podcast that Shalva Khachapuridze is the Georgian Dream candidate for the seat in Tetritskhado. I had thought Mamuka Abuladze was running as the candidate there, but after some online digging, I found that Bidzina switched him, as well as another candidate from Terjola, for Khachapuridze. Would you know anything about the reason behind the roster change? End of the question. We do not know anything at all about the reason for the roster change, except that we do know that it was a very late addition. So
the
name is really Khachapuridze,
which is your favorite Georgian
name. Right, exactly. Maybe he's related to Mevludi. So, our dedicated group of listeners from Terjola and Tetritskhado. If you have any ideas about this, please let us know, and we will report back. Another dedicated listener asked about the transparency of the current Georgian banking system. So here we go. It's pretty transparent. Quarterly reports for every bank are published on the National Bank of Georgia's website. There's fierce competition, but the majority of assets, almost 60% as of last year, were held by two banks, Bank of Georgia and TBC. There's a lot of growth in the banking sector, but there'll probably be a bit of a shakeout among some of the smaller ones at some point. Georgian banks are conservative, not nearly as leveraged as their Western counterparts. Lending rates are coming down a little bit as a result of competition. There's serious anti-money laundering checks, and Georgia participates in all of them. Although recently, when a certain very rich guy became involved in politics, the government applied many of those laws in ways that were not particularly impartial. Recently, to deal with all the political cash in the system, the government tried monitoring transactions of a big list of depositors via foreign banks, which, by the way, all the banks except ProCredit agreed to do for the government, but eventually the government just, pretty recently, I mean in the last couple of days, the government just gave up because it was too big of a mess. And the finger of the week goes to the German daily newspaper,
Financial Times Deutschland.
Financial Times Deutschland, not related to the British Financial Times, for making up a story about Georgia featuring invented motorcycle cops and quoting analysts they have never spoken to. Matthias, you want to talk to us about that?
No. Maybe Lincoln Mitchell wants to.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It was, really an appallingly made-up quote. So, you know, German speakers don't read the Financial Times Deutschland. So the GeoCapital number. Each podcast, we feature a GeoCapital number of the week. GeoCapital is Georgia's hippest financial organization. Full disclosure, I am a shareholder. They kindly give to Beelpod.com an interesting number each week, which lets people know what's going on. This week, the GeoCapital number is 2.5, which is the number of poultry per capita in Georgia. From the end of the first quarter of this year to the end of the second quarter, the number of poultry animals in Georgia has, I mean, did that count like peacocks, for example? You know,
it's probably turkeys and chickens.
Could be. Yeah, turkeys, chickens, sounds like it. The number of poultry animals in Georgia has almost doubled from 6.3 million to 11.2 million. That was coupled with a strong increase in egg production from 106 million to 125 million. Georgia's poultry stock consists mainly of chickens, Worldwide, the stock of chickens is almost 19 billion, according to The Economist. The country with the largest number of chickens per capita is
China.
Malaysia, with 7.35 chickens for every Malaysian. I'd like to see what 0.35% of a chicken looks like.
Chicken nuggets.
Chicken McNuggets, right. The Batumi International Art House Film Festival takes place from September 16th to 23rd, showing 40 movies in a competition as well as 40 short films in the Batumi cinema. According to a story in the Financial Times, this is not the Financial Times of Deutschland, but the Financial Times of the United Kingdom. The festival is also trying to revive the Georgian film sector by pushing for co-productions and will host networking and industry events.
That's fantastic.
That's totally fantastic. Great. I mean, I have to admit that the idea of a, you know, movie industry networking event I find appalling and horrifying, but, you know, glad it's happening in some
way. Well, I think they just want to bring, you know, script writers and producers and people with some cash together.
Absolutely. They, it's totally cool. And listen, I know that there's going to be some listeners there. There's going to be some, you know, some teach and learners who are going to, you know, sneak their way into that. We want to report back from listeners that make it to the Art House Film Festival in Batumi.
And I came across a couple of Georgia-related movies in the U.S. recently. Next week we'll talk a bit
fantastic
more about that.
Fantastic. On Wednesday, September 19th at 2 p.m., the Atlantic Council in Washington, D.C. will host a discussion on the October 1st parliamentary elections, featuring Stevie Nicks, no, just kidding, Stephen Nicks, the regional director of IRI, GW University's Corey Welt, who's very knowledgeable, by the way, married to a Georgian, Damon Wilson of the Atlantic Council, important guy, tight with President Obama, and former ambassador to Georgia, Ken Yalowitz, who worked at Dartmouth for a while and is a very nice guy. Check out the Atlantic Council's website for more information. Colga movies this week across from Roosevelt Valley Metro by McDonald's are My Week with Marilyn on Friday, September 14th. I saw it. It's good. A Separation, Iranian movie, fantastic. Everybody ought to see it. Monday the 17th. The Artist with a Georgian tie-in at the very beginning, so everybody make sure you're there on time. Wednesday, September 19th. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. Our email is tblpod@gmail.com or post to the forum on our website, www.tblpod.com.
What we say is not related to
what we say is
any
not
employers
related,
and
especially
any
related to this complicated, you know, pre-election time when everybody's freaking out and sometimes wants to be mean to us. Everything we say is not related to anything, and it's just our own opinions. And, you know, don't believe us anyway. We don't care. We will finish with Birthday Boy Mel Torme from 1962. Coming home, baby. Good to be back. Mega.
I'm coming home, baby, now. I'm coming home now right away. I'm coming home, baby, now. I'm sorry now I ever went away. Every night and day I go and stay. I'm coming home, baby.
Come on home.
Coming home, baby, now.
You know I'm waiting here for you.
I'm coming home now real soon.
You've been gone.
Coming home, baby, now.
You don't know what I'm going to do.
I'm coming home, I know I'm overdue.
Since you went away.
Expect me any day now real soon. I'm coming home.
Come on home.
Coming home, baby, now.
You know I'm praying every night.
And everything is gonna be fine.
You come on.
Coming home, baby, now.
I want to feel you hold me tight.
Expect to see me now anytime.
When I'm in your arms.
When you're in my arms, I'll be fine. I'm coming home.
Come on home.
I'm coming home, baby, now.
You know I'm counting every day.
I'm coming home now, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You come home.
I'm coming home, baby, now.
And baby, let me hear you say.
I'm coming home, you hearing what I say.
As you're coming home.
And I never will go away.
Hey.
I'm coming home. Coming home, baby, now.
You know I'm waiting at the door.
They can't hold me back now, no more.
All alone.
I'm pressing on, baby.
and pace it up and down the floor.
Oh, hear me holler and hear me roar.
Say you'll be with me.
Gonna be with you evermore. I'm coming home.
Come on home.
I'm coming home, baby, now.
Oh, baby, say you're coming home.
That's what I say I'm coming home.
Something's wrong.
The road is long, baby, now.
You want to either ride or bump.
I'm coming home and never more to roam.
Baby, tell me you're
baby, I'm for sure coming.